and she ended up having tons of jaw problems, tons of teeth problems. And unfortunately, and this is kind of gross, it caused a disease that caused honeycombing in the bones of her jaw, and eventually her lower jaw just completely came off.
Oh my goodness.
Hi, I'm Trevor Craig, and I'm a scientist.
Hi, I'm Brittany Hansen, and I'm a pop culture enthusiast. And this is OK, But Why?, a Microback Laboratories podcast about science and pop culture.
Hi, everyone. I am Trevor Craig with Microback.
And I'm Brittany Hansen.
And we are OK, But Why?, and this is our second episode. How are you doing today, Brittany?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Doing good. We're launching this podcast, recording a bunch of them kind of back to back to kind of get a library started. And it is a lot more deadlines that I'm used to facing. So every day I'm like, okay, what am I doing? And then I just start this whole new level of stress where I have to be like, oh, I got to get this done. I got to get ready for this. And then tomorrow I have this. So I feel like I've been running kind of nonstop for the last couple of days.
I know. I get so excited when I'm waiting to hear what our next topic is. So I'm really excited to get into this one today. But first, let's talk about why we started this podcast.
Yeah. So OK, But Why? Kind of was birthed from early conversations that we had a few years ago when Alexandra, who is our mutual leader, joined Microback. And Microback was is still a laboratory that does third-party testing. And we do testing in food, environmental, like water, life science, pharmaceuticals, across a lot of different industries. And we wanted to come in there and be more than just a testing company. So we developed what is our slogan, which is a better world one test at a time, where we are looking at, you know, not only doing that testing, but also improving education and enlightenment and helping customers and people who are just passing by about understanding the things that are going on. And we started having those conversations about why that was important and how we could achieve that. And kind of naturally, we started talking about ways to do that. And a podcast came up. And we kind of went back and forth about what this podcast would be about and how to go in there. And we were also at that time talking with marketing and our PR team. And we were talking about, you know, different things that were going on in the news and different stories. And that became kind of a popular topic to talk about. And I was one of the first people to be on those conversations that wasn't from the marketing team. And I would go on these huge tangents talking about like, oh, this is why we do this. And this is why we do this. And this is why you hear people say this. And, you know, this is important because of this. And that kind of got us started off. Well, maybe that's the idea for our podcast. And the okay, but why portion of it came because that was the question that we were being asked all the time. Like, okay, but why are we doing this? Or okay, but why do they need to do this? Or why aren't people worried about this? Or why isn't this in the news? And that kind of sparked the idea that later became this podcast. And now we've kind of invested in it where we're both like super excited about it and talking to each other every day about, okay, this is our next topic. And what do you think about this? And what do you think about this? And that's kind of where the podcast came from.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things about working with you is when I see a current event that has to do with science, I can ask you, but okay, why is this happening? So now we can bring your knowledge to everybody. And yeah, let's make that mission one test at a time, now one episode at a time.
Oh, I like that. We'll give that to Alexandra. Maybe that'll be another tagline for us. Yeah, a lot of our back and forth conversations, we message each other throughout the day at work are, you know, sometimes it's about projects and things we're working on. And other times it's just about like news stories that you've seen or I've seen that we're messaging back and forth or, you know, what have you heard about this? Or do you know anything about this? So that conversation's always kind of running in the background of our day-to-day jobs.
Yeah, I have a few questions for you actually this afternoon when we wrap this up. So I'm excited for our last segment today.
Great. Are you ready to get into today's story?
Let's do it.
So as per usual, I was talking about this earlier, is I love this story. This is one of those things that if you get me a little bit tipsy at a party and this topic comes up, I will talk about it for way too long to where the point where it goes from being interesting to be like, why do you know so much about this? but I'm going to tell you today about the Radium Girls. Have you ever heard about the Radium Girls before?
I had not, but I did a briefly search and it looked like there might have been a movie or two about it. So I'm really excited to hear the details and I'll have to watch the movie later.
Yes. In doing research for this, I watched one of the movies. I listened to a bunch of the podcasts that this is about. And I was just like, man, this is really cool, but this is also kind of a depressing story.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's start off by talking about radium. Do you know anything about radium?
I do not.
Okay. So radium is an element. It is discovered in 1898, and that happened about 20 years prior to this story. So just keep in mind when this story happened, they did not know as much as we know now about radium, but radium is radioactive. It was discovered by physicist Marie Curie, who you've probably heard of, and her husband Pierre Curie. And its properties were not well known at that time, and they were doing a bunch of research. And she ended up winning a Nobel Prize for this, several. And she's the first female to win a Nobel Prize. So it's kind of a big deal. And it was used originally in the successful treatment of some cancers. And because of that, it got this kind of theory that it was some miracle drug or miracle elixir, and they added it to everything. It was in waters, they put it in butter, in chocolate, in all kinds of foods, because they thought, well, it cured cancer, so it's good for you. And it would cause an effect on your red blood cells that would give people kind of a flushed pink cheek look. So they thought they looked healthier, so they continued to think it was good for them. So companies used radium as an additive into food, into toothpastes, into waters, all these kinds of things for quite a few years before they really started to figure out that it was dangerous. And the Radium Girls is actually the story of how it kind of got well known that it was dangerous and got out there.
Oh my goodness. Wait, so is radium like transmittable between people, or you have to be exposed to it?
You pretty much have to be exposed to it, but okay. We'll talk about this, the way it interacts with your body. It has long-term effects on your body, but you don't really become radioactive as a person, but things that are exposed to radium can become radioactive. Okay. And in fact, I'll tell you this now, Marie Curie ended up dying from radiation poisoning, and she would get severe burns from handling radium. And her notebooks and the things that she used for research to this day are considered too radioactive to be handled without protection or special equipment. And that's 100 years later. It is, not only is it dangerous and deadly, it's dangerous and deadly for a long time. And Pierre actually said at one point that he would never be in a room with pure radium because he thought it would melt his skin, ruin his eyesight, and eventually kill him. So they knew it was dangerous. And they had some suspicions it was dangerous, but they still thought there was some health benefits to it because it did successfully treat cancer. I mean, it did successfully treat cancer.
Do you know what about radium actually cured the cancer? Like, that's for me.
the way it kind of kills cancer is kind of complicated. And I don't want to get too much in that science because I don't really know it and I'll misspeak. But it essentially kills the cells and it targets all cells and it breaks those cells down. And the problem with cancer is it's rapidly reproducing cells that are out of control, which causes the tumors. Exposure to any radiation, and they still use radiation as a treatment for cancer, although it's not radium anymore. And break those cells apart and essentially stop that tumor from growing and sometimes break it up and make it go away.
Makes sense. Okay.
But the problem with radiation is it's also not super, it's not a silver bullet. So it doesn't target just cancer cells. It can target other cells. Mm-hmm. And exposure is different than what we find out when you're talking about consuming and things like that. So there's a couple different things there that we have to be a little bit more careful about.
Okay.
But it was nicknamed Liquid Sunshine, which is kind of funny to think about when you think about radiation and like the bright light and in this case, the glowing that it comes from it is considered like a good thing at that time, but it's actually pretty bad.
That made me think of Sunny D when you said that.
Liquid Sunshine, exactly. That's what I always think of is like those brightly colored, you remember like Echo coolers and stuff like that? They were like brightly colored. Now, I don't know if I would drink or eat anything that was brightly colored like that. I think that would be a turnoff when it comes to appetizing things.
Yeah.
So like I said, Marie Curie eventually died from radiation exposure. She died in the 30s. So this is after the events. So it was discovered in 1898. She died in the 30s. So just in that exposure time is when we're talking this entire story happens. And in that story, a lot of people die from exposure to radiation. And radium specifically is what we're talking about today.
Okay.
So one of the most popular uses of radium was its use in paint. It was mixed with paint, which would then make the paint have a soft glow. And they used that eventually on watches. And this became really, really popular during World War I, which is right around this time, because they were trying to coordinate and look at things, but they couldn't use a bright light because it would give away their location. So they had these watches that kind of glowed. I don't know what the past tense of glow is. And they would use these, and essentially they made this paint, and what would happen is the radium would slowly degrade and it would release isotopes or release electrons that would hit phosphorus, and then that phosphorus would gain that energy and glow. And it is still kind of something we use now. We use phosphorus and other forms of things that glow. And it was invented by, in 1908, by Sabin Arnold von Stockski, which I'm probably pronouncing his name wrong, so sorry if that happens. And it was originally used with radium, and radium uses a different type of radiation, which would then penetrate glass and things, which would then go into people's skin, which is why it was kind of dangerous. They eventually changed that to beta radiation, which could be held in by glass, and that would be less dangerous. But we're talking specifically about this one for that isotope when we're talking about radium. And the really interesting thing was during this time, was during the war, so all these men were gone. And at the time, wristwatches were a women's fashion, not a men's fashion, but men needed them while they were at war. And so they would come back using these wristwatches, and they became very, very popular, that men started wearing them too. But at that time, it also allowed women to get into the workforce and start doing things because the men were gone. And there was all these things and that they needed to do for both the war and to keep their houses going. So that's where these radium girls started, was working for these factories that use this paint. And I want to talk a little bit about the company because the company is kind of important. The first company that we're going to talk about was from 1917 to 1926. And remember, it was discovered in 1898. So that's not very long from the time they discovered radium to the time they started using it for these watches.
Right.
It was called U.S. Radium Corporation. And it was originally called Radium Luminous Material Corporation. And one of the things that kind of stood out to me is they use a lot of things that you would think is really beautiful, like luminous and glow. And one of the paints they used was undark. So it had all these really bright things about it that made it seem like it was this really amazing technology, mm-hmm. even though it was killing people. And they started off as a mining company where they were getting out these ores that they would pull the radium from. And you can find radium and uranium, and it's pulling from there. And we know uranium is dangerous now, but back then they were kind of just pulling it out and using it for everything. And that was done in Colorado and Utah. And the paint they made from it was called Undark, which is kind of, again, a cool name to think about. Like, oh, it's, you know, glows in the dark. You don't have to put it under sunlight for it to have the energy to glow under dark. And it would last for years.
Wow.
And it was kind of a really big deal. They made a plant in Orange, New Jersey, which I always want to say Orange County, which is not right. and there they hired a bunch of young women to work in these factories to paint watches, to compasses, and things that were used in the military. And they had a military contract. And they hired women, and they were, I say women, but honestly, some of them were very young girls. They could be as young as 15 or 16. Mm-hmm. But these jobs were considered very illustrious because they paid super, super well. And the radium was in the air. It was in the radium dust was in the air, and it would make everything glow. So these women were called the radium ghosts or ghost girls because they would leave and they would almost have a glow to them. And in fact, it was considered very beautiful and very desirable because they were listed as artists, not necessarily factory workers. And they would wear like their fanciest dresses to go work in these facilities because their dresses would glow out, would glow after. And then they would go to like speakeasies and go dancing. And these girls would glow in the dark. And I'm sure they looked amazing. Little fairies just kind of in like these dancing parties. They would paint their nails, their teeth, their hair. So they would all glow and give them like these dazzling smiles when they would go out.
Stunning, but slowly dying. So yes. Sad.
Really, really sad. So they, and during this time, there's approximately 4,000 people who were working on this, and almost all of them were women who were working in these radium factories. And what they would do is they would make paint, and they would make the paint in like a little crucible, which is like a little bowl in front of them. And the way that they were taught to paint these watch faces, because they would paint like the hands and all the numbers and all the little tick marks, or so that you could see them at night and they could tell time. And they would do them on compasses and watches and like equipment that would go into planes. So at night, you didn't have to use a light and you could be kind of stealthy, I guess. And also, it was considered very beautiful. And they would paint them and they would dip their paintbrush in there and then they would paint something. And then to get their paintbrush to be a fine point again, they would put it in their mouths. And that was what they were taught to do, is a spit technique or a lip technique, where they would kind of make the point, dip, paint something, point, dip, yep, paint something, over and over and over again. But what they were doing was slowly ingesting this paint. Yes. Now, the paint wasn't pure radium, so otherwise you'd have seen these effects right away. It was a mixture of different things, but it had low levels of radium in it. And it would be something that they would be doing all day because they were paid by the completed item. They weren't paid by the hour. And they were paid well. They were paid, I think, about 5 times more than a factory job. And like I said, they were called artists. So it was kind of like, oh, this is exciting for them to do. And the lip technique was considered really fast once you got good at it. So they could really make a lot of money by getting this stuff completed. These women were not dumb. They asked and said, is this safe for us? Is everything okay? And the factory assured them that it was all safe and that it was even healthy for them and all these kinds of things, even though the chemists who handled the radium would wear special equipment. They would put it in lead-lined things when they delivered it and all these other things. So it was kind of a mixed messaging for them. But again, this was considered the best job out there and they really wanted to do it. So they continued to do it. This continued for a while, and many of the women did not get sick for quite a bit of time. It could take up to 3 to 5 years before they started to get sick. And in this time, they were exposing themselves not only on the day-to-day at work, but also because of the little lip technique, but they were also painting themselves to go outside and do all these things. And so they were really exposing themselves quite a lot to this. And it became a really big industry because they would have the military contract, but also local contracts. And we're talking about one company, but at the same time this is going on, there's actually 2 other companies that are doing the same thing in Illinois. And we'll talk a little bit about them. So it wasn't long, and they started to have some physical reactions to this. And dentists were among the first people to notice that there were some problems. So there is one that is, she's considered the first one. And her name is, I'm going to mispronounce it, and I'm going to feel really bad about it because she's kind of an important deal. Her name is Amelia Molly Maggia, M-A-G-G-I-A. And she was the first one to have issues. And one of the first things they started to notice was teeth problems, but they also were feeling very weak. Their limbs would hurt, and they would just be kind of tired in general. And she went to a dentist because she had a tooth problem. The tooth basically just came right out. And instead of healing up, it actually became like an abscess. And then they would have more and more of these problems and they would see lots of pain. And she ended up having tons of jaw problems, tons of teeth problems. And unfortunately, and this is kind of gross, it caused a disease that caused honeycombing in the bones of her jaw. And eventually her lower jaw just completely came off.
Oh my goodness.
The radium is essentially treated like calcium would be and be absorbed by bones, but it wouldn't behave like calcium once it was absorbed by bones. So it would cause tiny holes all over their bones and cause all these problems. Eventually, her infections were so bad that even the bones in her ear were infected and all of her teeth were falling out and having all these problems. Other radium girls were experiencing problems where their bones would become extremely brittle. Their legs would break just by standing on them. Their spines would start to compress and they would have problems standing up and moving around. And that would become even worse as it went on. And eventually, these women were unable to work, but the company would just hire other people. So they were causing all these things to happen. All the radium girls were starting to get sick. They were going to see doctors. They were talking to the doctor that was from the company. And the doctor from the company was not actually a doctor. He was a toxicologist. And he was saying that everything was fine. And that actually the reason that they were getting sick and having problems was from things like arthritis. And even he accused them of having syphilis.
Oh my gosh. I was just going to ask, like, okay, but why did the research institutions not like notify the public if they were so aware of the dangerous radioactive material?
It is a huge portion of the story is the company essentially paid doctors and dentists to tell these girls that it was other problems and not do any research on it. And by telling them they had syphilis, it was kind of shame-based, so they wouldn't talk about it at work, and they wouldn't even say anything to other people because, well, what's happening with you? Oh, I have syphilis, a sexually transmitted disease. And so then they would be basically kind of trying to cover it up. And the doctor that worked for the company was not a doctor and was telling these women all these types of things. And then they were even paying local doctors to say that, local dentists to say that, and they were covering it up.
This is like a true story of like corporate greed and denial, basically.
Yes. Well, and that was the whole thing. And because of this and because of the story, it wasn't really taking off in media because everyone saw radium as this miracle elixir. And then they had these girls coming out and saying like, no, this is killing us. This is causing problems. But then they would say, well, she has syphilis and those like things. So it was kind of this back and forth because the company wanted to continue to make money.
Right.
And it was starting to see that it was causing problems. And eventually this reached the media in a wider sense, and they start to see losing profits because other people were starting to see problems with radium. Mm-hmm. And eventually their lead chemist for this company died from radiation poisoning, which sparked more investigations. And this large investigation was done, and eventually they said, hey, actually, it's this radium that's killing people, and it's a problem, and you like the way that we're using it is unsafe. And the company then paid for other studies to be done to disprove this study. So they're having all this back and forth. And eventually, Amelia died. She dies very tragically. She is buried, and they put on her death certificate that she died from syphilis.
No way.
Yes. So they do really everything they can to cover this up because then it's embarrassing for the families to even further talk about. But there's lots of these girls who are getting sick. And once they start to see other people start to get sick, including this lead chemist who died, and the man I mentioned earlier who invented the paint, he died as well.
Wow.
His exposure was to his hands, not from consuming it, but he died from radiation poisoning. And essentially, it destroys your bones. It messes with your red blood cells. So you become anemic, you become very weak, and you have all these problems where essentially you're falling apart.
Yeah.
But then they couldn't find any help to this. So we're at 1923 now. The first painter died, Amelia. And like I said, her jaw completely fell away from her skull. And not like it didn't have to be removed. Like the doctor went in and lifted and it basically just came off.
Oh my gosh.
Which is so, so horrible to think about because she's just trying to live her life. But they use the case of the doctors dying and the man who invented it and all these radium girls who are getting sick that they actually start to pull together a case. And there's a pathologist who does some work and they have a case and essentially they start to take it and the girls get together, five of the women from New Jersey, to sue the company and say what's going on. But there's an issue right now because at the time, in order for you to sue your company, there was a 2-year statute of limitations. So you only have 2 years in order to sue the company if something happened to you. But it took around 5 years before you got sick. And these women weren't living very long either. So if they died, then they had to continue on these lawsuits. And what they basically started doing was these companies were dragging these cases out where they would not talk about it, or they would say they can't show up to these cases because the executives were out of office or they were on vacation because they were waiting for these women to die.
Wow.
And which is just horrible. But at that time, also, the media started to pay attention to this and see that these women were dying and see that all these things were happening just with these women and that the company was also being kind of shady. Not kind of shady. They were being very shady and they were moving things around and kind of hiding this. So this is when that company, there's that study out there, they're starting to see losses and then they make all these other additional studies to kind of go out there and say what's going on. Even though they go to sue the company, it takes them a long time before they're able to find a lawyer who's going to take up the case. So eventually, a lawyer named Raymond Berry agrees to accept the case. And many of the painters just have months to live. And they were forced to settle out-of-court settlements because they just needed money to cover their medical bills and eventually their funerals. And they knew that they were dying. But because of that, they continued to fight because they were fighting for the other women that were still working and the other women that were still alive. And one of the scary things they mentioned is one of the ways that you knew that you might have radium poisoning was at night when you would walk by a mirror, the women had ingested enough of it that they would actually have a glow to them.
Oh my gosh.
So they would themselves start to glow because they had so much radium in their bodies. I mean, that's got to be horrifying to like walk by a mirror late at night and be like, oh no, I'm glowing. All my other friends have all these horrible things, so it's going to happen to me. At the same time, there is another company that is established in Ottawa, Illinois, and that is around 1922, and is the Radium Dial Company, and they are doing the same thing where they are painting watches using radium, and they are working for local things. They're not doing military contracts, or at least as much military contracts. And they eventually fire their president of that company, who then splits off and makes another company very close by. So now there's three companies now hiring radium girls, essentially, to go out there and paint these watches. Even though the trials in New Jersey are happening and these things are coming up in New Jersey, the women in Illinois don't know about it yet. But eventually they start to experience similar conditions and they start to see things as it goes on. And in, I think, 1928 is what my notes say, was when the first courts were starting to settle these things and they were starting to give them some money, but they were still kind of going forward. Their lawsuits appeared in local newspapers. They were, again, assured over and over in written format that these were all safe and that they were actually suffering from a viral infection, which is what was told to the women in Illinois. So they were told that the women in New Jersey were actually all had syphilis or something else going on, and that's why they were dying, not because of the radium. So they continued to use this, even though that they knew things were happening. It was getting worse. In 1938, a radium worker named Catherine Wolfe successfully sued the radium dial company over illness. And that's really when the issue started to kind of come to an end. But in the beginning of this, they had all these people who were deciding to sue. Grace Fryer is one that is mentioned. I believe her father was working for a union. And so she was one of the first people to kind of really force this, even though that she knew she was going to die, and make these lawsuits. And eventually they got them into court after they got this lawyer in there, and it moved really, really slowly. And in the first appearances in court, two women were bedridden and none of them had enough strength to raise their arms to take an oath. That's how degraded their bodies were. So those five girls that were in that final lawsuit were dubbed the Radium Girls. It kind of caused this huge blow up to happen in legal precedents. And they talked about labor safety, that limit of how long you could be sick before you could sue the company was called into question. And they were kind of starting to win these lawsuits. In Illinois, the women started to sue to have their medical bills taken care of and their funerals expenses, and they couldn't work anymore. So they were looking for just basic living coverage. And that's what they were winning in these court cases, is essentially the company had to pay them for their medical expenses, for their funerals, and then for their continued support, what they needed to live since they mm-hmm. couldn't work anymore. The attorney who represented the radium corporations actually appealed it over and over and over and over, so they didn't have to pay for quite a while. And it went 8 different times it was appealed before they were finally forced to pay. And I'm sure if you watch anything on TV considering court cases, you can see appeals can take so long. Mm-hmm. And that was a huge deal. And it went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court decided not to hear the case and that the lower court standing would stand before it was officially ended. So this went pretty high up with corporations continually trying to sue this. Again, it was all settled eventually in 1928, and they went through and they had to make official payments to all these people, and they had to change their death certificates. And one of the interesting things I saw is they eventually exhumed her body, the first woman who died, and her body still glowed. Radiation was actually present in her body. This, again, kind of was used because they use this for science to start taking measurements of these girls to say how much radium were they exhaling, how much was found in their tissues. And it was used to actually make new measurements of what is safe and not safe to be used out there. So radium paint was still used up until the 1970s, 1960s, but they did eventually give the women protective clothing, the different type of pins, so they didn't have to touch them to their mouth. I believe they used glass pins that would always stay sharp. Mm-hmm. And they changed the way they were paid, so they weren't paid by the item, so they weren't forced to try to go as fast as possible. It is probable that many of those women still later developed cancer as they got older, but that was much less because they weren't ingesting it and they had some safety measures implemented. To this day, radium is still monitored because it is a very dangerous molecule, and they eventually made the National Bureau of Standards to establish a tolerance level for radium, which is 0.1 microcuries. They label the radiation measurement curie after Marie Curie. And that is essentially how much energy it is giving off in order to, I think it's 25 grams of water to raise 1 degree of temperature over the course of an hour. And that's how much they were measuring it. So it is a very, very low limit that is acceptable.
So just to assure our audience, does the radium still exist today? And where is it?
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. So it is still a thing today. You still have to worry about what they call rad testing. Some radium is still used. They still use radium in some cancer treatments, but it is much less commonly used. And it is almost always used for a deep cancer treatment. Prostate cancer is one of them. I think some breast cancers use it as well. But it is used in much lower amounts, and they use it in a much more controlled way. And it normally they don't find it lasting longer than, I think it was like 11 to 14 months or something like that. But certain radium isotopes, and there's 33 isotopes of radium, so there's a few out there, have half-lives of 1,600 years. So even back then when they're using it, it still remains, and they still have to test it. So they call that rad testing, and it's actually something that Microback does testing for, and it is looking for certain radiums. There's two radiums that are generally looked at. It's used at different types of radiation emission, and they find it in water and soils and in some different materials as well. And so they still have to do testing for that.
Is there certain places or items that are more common than others, like areas of the world or things that have been exposed to a certain element?
The radium that's found naturally is often a very short half-life, so it degrades very quickly. Obviously, if you're mining uranium ore that has radium in it, that's a really high risk. And those facilities have to be really careful that when they're mining and doing those types of things, that it's not being leaked into the environment in other ways, or when it's being purified, it's not being leaked into the environment in a way. Radium is almost not used at all commercially. They're not using it in watches. They've replaced it. They don't use it in watches or cancer treatments or x-rays, because they also use radium in x-rays at one point. Mm-hmm. They don't use it very frequently at all anymore. They've used other radioactive isotopes, which are a lot cheaper and safer to use. But because it has such a long half-life, you still have to be concerned that it's out there. And because we know it's so dangerous and it has a high probability of causing cancers and degradation, we have to make sure that those areas where it could be, they're testing to make sure it's really low. Sure. And there's treatments they can do if they know there's contamination using other elements that basically help bind it and make it less dangerous. But it's still very dangerous if you don't know those types of things.
Got it.
They still use those tissue samples, and this case was eventually, again, used to break up that rule that said you only had 2 years if to sue, but it's also used to build up OSHA, because this was something that they started to investigate and what OSHA started. And before OSHA was established, over 14,000 or 14 or 15,000 people would die a year at their workplace. After OSHA established, that number started drastically decreasing. It still happens occasionally, but OSHA's really focused on making those things safe. And this was one of those things that they talked about, was because how they make this safe. Because it was in the air. They didn't control how they were using it. They didn't give them proper protective equipment to wear. PPE is what we call it in the labs. And now all those things are regulated by OSHA to make sure that they're all safe. Not just radium, but all things that could be dangerous at work. This became a really big story. It was also hidden for a while, where no one really talked about it, because it was kind of abuse of these women who were working at these factories, and it was kind of allowed to go on for so long. But now it's become kind of more popular to talk about this story. There was a short story written about it in 1937, which is kind of the first one. There are several movies about it. One of them just came out in 2020. And it's called Radium Girls. That came out in 2020. There's several mentions on TV shows, on podcasts, on shows like, do you remember A Thousand Ways to Die?
Yeah.
There's an episode of A Thousand Ways to Die. It's on Drunk History. Okay. A couple of my favorite podcasts have talked about this. It's been featured in TV shows. And bands have talked about the Radium Girls and mentioned the Glowing Girls in music and things like that as well. It has been pretty well established that this is one of the first cases of corporations sacrificing workers in the adjustment to make money. Essentially, they didn't care. They were making money. And even when they knew it was a problem, they continued to do it. I grew up with a clock. My grandparents had a clock that glowed in the dark. And it was a big grandfather clock, and it was one of my favorite clocks, and it had all the numbers glowed, the hands would glow, and there was a moon and stars and sun on it too, and they all glowed at night too. And I called and asked my grandfather to check on when it was made, and it was made before the 1960s, which probably means it was made with radium.
Wow.
The radium clocks probably don't glow anymore because the phosphorus is broken down. So they're not going to glow anymore. But you can treat them with phosphorus because the radium is still radioactive. If you treat them with phosphorus, they will go back to glowing.
Okay.
They are emitting very, very small amounts of radium, so it's not a huge concern unless, I guess, you own 5,000 of these clocks and you're just standing in that room. Again, the biggest thing was the paint that they were ingesting was causing all these problems.
Got it.
I mean, it can't be understated how critical this was. These girls suffered things like tooth loss. You know, the loss of the jaw or the breakdown of jaws is called radium jaw. They even named it after this. They were bedridden. Their bones broke. Their spines were compressed. Some of them had to wear special casings so they could just sit up and stand because their bones were not strong enough to support their own weight. And because of that, that is why we have a ton of knowledge about radiation and making sure that we're testing out there in the environment to keep it out of the environment. And it's also one of the reasons we have unions and workers' rights and OSHA and all those things. So their impact is really, really critical to what happened now, even though their stories were hidden for so long.
So outside of the five radium girls, do you know how many girls total were affected by this?
So I saw different numbers. There was 4,000, about 4,000 employees total. And I think over 30 women died, but many more suffered consequences like cancers and stuff as they got older. Not all of them passed away. And then they eventually did give them some personal protective equipment that helped so they can continue the job. Who knows how many of them had cancers 20 years later, that was never linked back to actually what caused there. But it's probably around 30, but there's probably a lot more that I just didn't see direct reference to.
Sure. But yeah, it's just crazy. It's such a shocking fact that dozens of women had to die from radium poisoning before like something was done from it. So that was a very interesting and sad story.
It is. And I always think about like, when you do something cool in college or find out something's cool in college, you're like, oh, I'm going to wear this or I'm going to do this. I'm going to go out and everyone's going to see me. And then later you find out or you look back and you're like, I looked so stupid. This is one of those cases where not only did they probably look back at this, but it was killing them. And they like thought they looked beautiful and they thought they looked amazing. And I'm sure they did for the time. But looking back, it's like, oh, that's crazy to think you were painting your mouth, your fingernails, your hair with radium dust and radium paint so that you were like this glowing creature and then like it just come back and later on you can't even get out of bed.
Yeah, it's really sad. I can look back at some of my fashion choices a few years ago and feel the same way, but luckily they weren't killing me.
Exactly. Like all the things that you were doing, they're like, oh my gosh, those were so stupid. I can't believe I was doing that. Or, you know, some people permanently change their bodies for fads. You know, I think of like lip liner tattoos or people who get eyebrows done and they can never change it. And it's like, this one would kill you. And so it's so easy how those, you know, fads and beautification processes were really damaging.
Yeah, it's sad. Well, should we wrap up with our What Are You Eating segment where we discuss what we're consuming this week, whether it's food, pop culture, or anything that we can't stop consuming?
Yes, let's go there and talk about something a little bit happier.
Yeah, Trevor and I are both very interested in pop culture, so we're naturally drawn to stories that impact our day-to-day. So what are you eating?
I have to admit, the girls got me, and I am eating Girl Scout cookies like it's my job.
Which one's your favorite?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. So I bought three boxes. Oh, I got to tell you this, too. I bought my Girl Scout cookies from someone I play volleyball with who asked if we were interested in getting Girl Scout cookies from his daughter after a volleyball game. So we're all sweaty, tired, and hungry. He's like, do you want some cookies? It was the best sales pitch I've ever heard. Instantaneously, I was like, yeah, I want some of these cookies. So I bought three boxes. I got Thin Mints because I love frozen Thin Mints. I put them in the freezer and I forget about them. And then like 2 months from now, I will find them and I'll be like, ooh, it's so exciting. I get the lemon ones.
Okay.
And I love the lemon ones because they're really tasty, but they also have these cute little messages on top of them that says like, I'm a trendsetter or those types of things on the top of the lemon ones. So every time I grab one, I'm like, you're right. I am a I'm such a good person. And then I get the shortbread ones because I'm secretly like an 80-year-old woman. And I just want like tea and like shortbread cookies and just to like sip it and watch movies for like hours at a time. Those are my Girl Scout go-tos.
Do they have tag-alongs still?
They still have tag-alongs, yes.
Okay, yeah, I think those are my favorite.
Do you have any right now, or do you, are
no,
you
I
standing
been
strong
sold
and avoiding
to,
it?
I haven't been sold to, but I think we, I don't know, maybe the neighborhood we live in just doesn't have any young gals coming to my door, but I have avoided it so far.
You stand strong because I essentially open them and you can't reseal them. So once I open them, I'm like, well, I have to eat these ones for the next couple of days. Otherwise, they'll go stale or something. So like every time I walk by them, I just pop a cookie. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, well,
I ate
a whole box. How did this happen?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I have the house to myself this week. So instead of cooking home cooked meals, I am really relishing in my girl dinner era. Have you heard the term girl dinner lately?
I have, and I'm very interested to see what your girl dinner is.
For people listening that don't know, it's basically like the concept of girls living off of random snacks, like a handful of peanuts or charcuterie board, like anything very low effort, because typically I'm making like full meals. And when I have the house for myself, it's just like kind of nice not have to cook. But definitely just loving that. I think I ate like just random crackers and snacks. And I actually tried a Trader Joe's recipe that I saw on Instagram that was pretty easy to make. So yeah, it's been kind of nice. But speaking of trending things, I was chatting with you about this earlier. What's the chaos with the fried rice syndrome? Have you heard that?
Yes, I have. And a lot of people have moved away from calling it fried rice syndrome just because it's not just fried rice. But with most foods, you cook them. And in that process of cooking them, you kill off a lot of that bacteria. But the way rice is made, it gets hot, but then it basically is allowed to cool and slowly absorb all that moisture into the rice. And so certain bacteria, and the one that they talk about most with this is Bacillus cereus, form spores. And so spores are like a protective coating around certain bacteria that keeps them alive and protects them from hazardous conditions. So you can form spores under actually radiation. They can form spores under high temperatures or super low temperatures. And essentially, it keeps that bacteria in like a state that as soon as it's able to reach the right conditions again, it can come back to life.
Okay.
And you see that a lot with fried rice just because of how people store it. You don't cook fried rice exactly the same way as you do a lot of other foods. And then it's stored kind of at a medium temperature over a period of time. Mm-hmm. And that Bacillus cereus comes back to life. And we as humans, and actually a lot of animals too, react very strongly to Bacillus cereus. It can kick in within anywhere from like 30 minutes to a couple hours after consuming it. And it's one of those things where you're stuck in the bathroom.
So kind of like food poisoning.
Yeah, it's definitely – it's what most people probably – when they say, oh, I got food poisoning, you probably got Bacillus or Staph or something like that.
Sure.
But you're in the bathroom for – usually it hits people overnight, of course, because it's something you eat at dinner. And then later that night, you're like, what's happening? But then you're better the next morning.
Interesting.
So it's really hard to trace because by the time it happens, it's already gone.
Yeah.
And it's really difficult to kind of control.
So the rice is fine. It's just the reheating of the rice that people should be aware of.
Well, sort of. It's in the cooking of the rice, you're not necessarily getting rid of all that bacteria. And then it's kept warm for a while, which allows that. But then reheating the rice doesn't get rid of the bacteria because Bacillus cereus will be killed if you reheat it in the right ways. But it produces a toxin, and that's what you actually react to. And high temperatures don't get rid of toxins. So you can still react to the toxin even though you've killed off all the bacteria. And one of the ways you make fried rice is with day or a couple day old white rice. You make the rice, you let it dry out, and then you use that to make your fried rice because it gets a lot of the moisture off there. But in the process of getting that moisture off there, you're allowing Bacillus to grow.
Got it. Yeah, I thought about that because there's this fried rice at Trader Joe's that I like. And I was like, wait a second.
Fried rice is one of my go-to quick meals because I eat rice with a lot of other food. And then I'm like, well, I'll just save my extra rice and then I'll make fried rice in a couple of days. And then I'm still very nervous about like, unless I get sick. I haven't had those conditions happen in a while, but it's pretty bad. I had a friend recently who got very, very sick and we were talking about what we thought he had. And I said, I think it might have been the rice that you ate. And he was like, do I throw it away? And I was like, yeah, I think you kind of have to. Like, I wouldn't want to risk you being sick again over something like that. I don't know if it's worth it kind of a thing.
Yeah, I had Googled it briefly and it looked like they were saying that you should only store it like up to 4 days. Otherwise, it's no good. But sounds like there's more details to that.
Yeah, I use a 72-hour rule for leftovers. So if I cook it, if I don't eat it within 72 hours, I toss it,
yeah.
Which I hate food waste. That's one of the things I talk about in a lot of my pod or a lot of my webinars is food waste. Mm-hmm. I hate it. I hate it so much, but I also hate being sick. So it's yeah. like, well, you got to kind of balance that out.
Yeah. That's why I'm just doing girl dinners. Cause I can't eat like a full, the amount of food that I would cook would go wasted. So we'll just.
So, and most of the time now what I'll do is I'll make enough for whatever I'm eating that meal. And then the next day, and I'm like, mm-hmm. that's it. So I just cook enough for like 2 days,
yeah.
but I know that's not always cost savings is hard.
Yeah.
Because like when my mom cooks at home, she makes enough for the whole family for like 3 or 4 days because it's cheaper for her to buy in bulk kind of thing.
Right.
But then I'm like, well, what if it go? What if it's contaminated on day one? You just continue eating it for 3 days.
No good.
The other thing I was going to mention was you were talking about girl dinner, and I was reading about girl dinner, and I was like, oh, I've been participating in girl dinners on lazy nights for so long, and I had no idea. The other day, I definitely came in, and I had for dinner a bag of Doritos and some shredded cheese.
The shredded cheese on the Doritos?
I did, like a monster. I was ashamed. I was so ashamed.
I haven't had Doritos in a while. That actually sounds so good.
Well, Cool Ranch Doritos pair excellent with mozzarella. I'll let you know.
Oh my gosh, Cool Ranch! I was totally picturing like the red bag, like double nachos.
No, no. I want Cool Ranch and mozzarella cheese together.
Oh, my gosh.
I was greatly shamed. And the next morning, the leftover, like the bag and stuff, were still on my kitchen yep. table. And I was like, oh, oh, this is so
Don't
embarrassing.
Remind me.
Yeah. I have to hide the evidence.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, enough about the radium girls. And people, be careful about your reheating of the rice.
I know. I'm going to make everybody – every time people listen to podcasts or anything I'm talking about, they're always like, well, now I'm afraid to eat or go grocery shopping. And it is the punishment of having too much knowledge, I guess.
Yeah. I definitely operate in my kitchen much differently now that I know you, but only for the good.
You're welcome. Also, I'm sorry.
All right. Well, we'll see you guys next time on OK But Why.
All right. Have a good one, guys. This has been OK, But Why? A Microbac Laboratories podcast. Microbac Laboratory operates the largest network of privately held testing facilities in the United States, providing broad analytical offerings and testing insights across the environmental, food, and life science markets.
A company with more than 50 years experience honing its craft, Microbac is on a mission to improve the world around us one test at a time.
To learn more about Microbac testing services and this podcast, please visit microbac.com.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Your support means the world to us. If you want to stay updated on all of our latest episodes, make sure to follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoyed today's show, leave us a review. Thank you.